How many of you have ever seen on TV the strongest man competition or something like the Highland Games that they have televised every so often on TV? They don't have it very often, but they do every so often have them on TV. They're an international strongman competition held every year with hugely muscled individuals who lift things like huge Atlas stones, concrete stones, tree logs, and even automobiles. I mean, they take automobiles and take out the floor, and they get inside the automobile and lift it up and walk with these cars. They throw objects like barrels or beer kegs over a large bar. They do all kinds of things. In the Highland Games, they have a long telephone pole type thing that they try to throw and flip over end over end. It's called a caper, and so it's one of those things. It's very interesting as well. But these guys on these shows are humongous. I mean, they have muscles bigger than my head. I mean, they're just huge. They're giants. And as I was thinking about them, I came across a video that I wanted to play to you this morning. I had to edit it down a little bit. It was about a 20-minute video, but it talked about these guys that are currently the strongest men in the world. One's the strongest men world competition, strongest man, and one's the competition in Europe. Don't know what they call it there, but in Europe, he's the world's strongest man there in Europe. But they actually happen to be brothers. And so I'm just going to let you watch this video about them, and I will post a full link to the whole video on Facebook and online if you want to watch the full video of it as well. It's very humorous.
In Viking mythology, giants inhabited Earth even before the gods arrived. The gods eventually overtook them. Many of these giants were believed to have gotten buried under mountains and indicate their presence through volcanic fires and earthquakes. In our written history, however, giants and tests of strength have existed for thousands of years. In Iceland, in the Scandinavian countries of Northern Europe, and most notably in the northernmost part of Great Britain, the Scotland Highlands. The first written reference to strength competitions in this part of the world dates back over 1,000 years. But even prior to that, various clans used what they called manhood stones for centuries as tests of strength. This tradition eventually lived on as a competition in Scotland called the Highland Games.
This gathering, with its smell of heather, taste of scotch, and men who really are men.
Having existed for hundreds of years, the Highland Games was the world's first strongman competition. Today, the sport of strongmen has gotten more and more popular with the rise of internationally recognized strongmen such as Thor and Eddie Hall. The rebirth of giants is here, and the sport is bigger than ever. And a few weeks ago, we got a peculiar comment on our second channel, Seek Discomfort. Come hang out with us. We currently are the world's strongest man and Europe's strongest man. As I have myself been struggling with injuries since the age of 18 and having been forced away from the amount of strength training as I would have liked, being able to witness strength of this caliber felt like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Naturally, we said yes. And with the incredibly serendipitous timing that we sometimes are blessed with, they invited us to meet them at a strongman competition they were competing in that weekend in Glasgow, Scotland, just a few hours away from their home. We're going inside of the event to meet our friendly giants for the first time.
And the brothers! How
are you? Oh my god, that's so good!
What's up, man?
How are you?
Oh my god, you're good. Oh, it's so good to see you.
Fate would have it, the brothers ended up finishing first and second in the competition. So the next day, we drove with them 3 hours north to their home in Inverness to join them in trying to live a full day in their lives and understand how they became the giants they are today. Throughout our day with the Stoltman brothers, they told us off camera about some of the challenges they'd faced throughout their lives to get to where they are today, including Tom, the current world's strongest man who was born with autism. So we sat down to hear more about his and their shared, immensely inspiring journey.
Were you always like a strong kid growing up, or did that come later in your life? like I always wanted to be that strong guy, and then joined the local gym and just got this buzz from lifting weights.
I was a twig, tall, glasses. I was never ever interested in gym. Obviously with autism and stuff, I wasn't good with kind of people. I wasn't uncomfortable in my class.
I felt I had that kind of duty to fulfill in trying to help Tom, because I saw what the gym did for me, the confidence, the training, being in the gym, lifting weights, making progress did for me. So I thought this was something really important for his growth as a human. I remember the first time we went to the gym, his head was down the whole time, wouldn't speak to anyone, very shy, very anxious.
Girls were looking at me, so uncomfortable, the most uncomfortable I've ever been in my life.
A year later, he's starting to make friends. Another year, he's competing.
So I thought strongman was just a thing you turn up, lift weights and go home, but I was totally wrong. You know, like the first interviews, head down, Luke took the lead.
Tom would generally give like yes or no answers. Are you okay, Tom? Yes. And then he'd wave and go off. And now, you know, I can't get a word in at all now with Tom.
I just proud that I was able to, like, you know, someone with autism beating these kind of 24 other normal guys, and I've got a disability and I was able to, like, you know, conquer the world. It's a cool feeling.
You're going to be a lot of kids' heroes.
Hopefully, yeah. I hope I'm the real superhero, you know. Yeah, it's good. That's what I want to do, you know.
So. Sure.
Boom.
Again, there's more parts of that video there, but as I said, these in this video, they are friendly giants. And like I said, the other part of the videos that I didn't have time to show has these guys filmed competing against these skinny guys that were filming the show there, you saw at the beginning there, and kind of competing against them and trying to lift and do the things that these strong men do and talk about their day. And anyways, if you want to watch the whole story, you can. But I wanted to include their stories this morning because one of them says, hey, I didn't start out this way. I was a skinny, tall guy, and he was autistic as well, and so he really didn't get to be a giant very quickly, but that helped him to become this gigantic, muscular guy, and he's now, like I said, the won the competition last year in June for the World's Strongest Man, and so he has that trophy on his shelf there. But sometimes we think about that you need to be strong to do things in life. And we've been talking in our series about hope. And sometimes we think that we need to be strong in our hope in order to have hope type things. And that only those who are strong and capable can have that hope. That's what we've been talking about these last few months. And last week we started about the stories of hope that are in the Bible. So we talked about Hannah and that had the story of hope in her story, and all these stories had the word hope in them. In fact, this morning we'll see, as I was searching through the Bible, I was pleasantly surprised that I found hope twice in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. Now, so chapter 17 of Samuel, 1 Samuel is one of the most famous accounts in the world, and man, I did not see that. My notes cut off here in a little bit, so I'll have to see what. Anyways, and I would wager anyone, if you'd ask anyone in the world about the story, they would be familiar with the story of David and Goliath, right? Yet the story, until I came to this series on hope, I never really connected David with hope. And yet as I looked at him in this light, I found new insights that I think were very important. And so I hope that you'll see those this week, because last week, I'm going to read the story of hope, and we'll get three more lessons that we can learn from this story of hope. But the main point of all this morning is that you will see these lessons that you do not need to be strong or the most powerful to have hope. You don't need to be the most powerful or strong to have hope, that everyone can have hope. We have the story of David and Goliath here. And once again, we're told that the Philistine armies have come and gathered together. And the Philistines, have been a problem for the Israelites for a long time now. I mean, we saw them clear back in the book of Genesis with Isaac, the son of Abraham, how when Abraham's son Isaac started to become more wealthy and started getting bigger flocks, that the Philistines felt jealous of him. And so they started to stop up the wells and clog up the wells that Abraham had built. And so that became a problem between him and between Isaac and the Philistines. These were the same people throughout the book of Judges that persecuted the Israelites when they sinned and went their own way and did what was right in their own eyes, the Philistines would come in and oppress them many times. This was the people that Samson fought against in his story. This was the people who, in the first part of 1 Samuel, defeat the Israelites, and they bring the Ark of the Covenant out to battle with them, and they actually conquer and the Israelites and take the Ark of the Covenant captive and take it back to their homeland, and eventually, 3 or 4 months later, they have to give it back because of the plagues that God sends upon them because they have this Ark of the Covenant. But now we're under the kingship of Saul, and the Philistines were once again threatening Israel. Now, before I get into the story of David, actually, I think it's fascinating to look at Saul as well in this connection. Because Saul was anointed first king over the nation of Israel. He was head and shoulders above everyone else. He was a huge guy in his own right. And he was a very popular king who led Israel in many, many victories. Unfortunately, Saul's popularity got to his head. And he disobeys God by not only offering sacrifices instead of the priest Samuel, but he also refuses to follow God's direction to completely destroy the Amalekites. He was told to destroy the Amalekites, completely destroy them, completely wipe them out, man, woman, child, herds, flocks, sheep, everything. That everything was to be dedicated to God, and he doesn't. He keeps the king alive, keeps some animals alive for sacrifice, he says later on, but he disobeys God. And Samuel confronts him on both these occasions and tells him that God has rejected him as king because he has not been listening to God. And so he says that God's going to give the nation a new man, a man after God's own heart that would take his place. And this puts Saul into a very bad depression, bad state. It says in 1 Samuel 16, verse 14, it says, "Now the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord tormented him." I mean, Saul had gone so far down the bad path that God's left him and said, "Hey, I'm going to send an evil spirit to torment you." He had lost hope. And so so he enlists the talents of a young man named David to kind of get him over these troubled times that he's in. And so he finds this harpist, and David comes to him. And it says, whenever the evil spirit of God came upon Saul, David would play his harp. And then relief would come to Saul, and he would feel better, and the evil spirit would leave him. It's one of those old stories there that the music calms the savage beast, right? I mean, that phrase was penned in the late 1600s that William Congreve wrote down this quote, that music has charmed to soothe the savage beast, to soften rocks and bend knotted oaks. I mean, that's his nice quote there. But remember this, because we'll come back to this at the end of my point here. But Saul was hopeless, and yet this music that David brought hope. Little did Saul know, though, that David had been already anointed as king by Samuel. Samuel had anointed him, and David was going to be the next king. But David was content to let Saul remain as king until God removed him as the king there in Israel. And so David just continued playing, but he was still young, and he traveled back and forth between his home in Bethlehem and to Saul's home there in Gibeah. Now we get to the battle here at Goliath, with Goliath. It says in first one of several steps, 1 Samuel 17, verse 1, I just lost it. There we go. It says this, "Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Succoth in Judah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with a valley between them." Now, the battle lines were drawn, and actually, it's a very beautiful place in Israel that this valley takes place there. And I think Mom and Dad went there when they went to Israel there. But this valley of Elah there in Israel was a place of a battle. They were told that this Goliath that came out was a huge guy. Some say he was 9 feet tall, and some translations say he's only 6'9", but still a tall person in that day. But either way, he was huge. He was well equipped with armor as well. It says, as we continue reading, that he had a bronze helmet on his head. He wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. That's 125 pounds. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and he had a bronze javelin slung on his back. His spear staff was that like a weaver's rod, and the iron weight on it was 600 shekels, 15 pounds, just his spearhead. Okay, so this guy is walking around with 150 pounds of just armor. I mean, probably more. We're not told how heavy his greaves were, or javelin itself were that was on his back. But he's walking around. If you're walking around with 150 pounds on you, maybe up to 200 pounds on you, you have to have some muscles, right? I mean, probably like those giants there that lifted all these big weights. There's one point in there in the video that, again, I was wanting to show, but it just was at the wrong time. But that this guy, Tom, lifted three guys. He had three guys on this little collar, I guess you could call it. And he was lifting these guys up. Not only the collar was weighing 150 pounds, but probably 150 pounds on each of the guys as well, and was lifting these guys up there. I think they said over 900 pounds. But anyways, it weighed a lot, and he was walking around with these guys on this harness type of thing. Anyways, so Goliath was huge, to put it easily. He could have, in order just to move, he had to have muscles like the men that we had in the video here. But we're told that he issued a challenge to the Israelite army. He says this in verse 8. Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight me and kill me, we'll become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us. Then the Philistine said, this day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. And so this huge guy comes out, and the next verse says this, not surprisingly, on hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Dismayed and terrified. I would be too if a guy like that came challenged me. But I like what the message message translates this verse, because this brings our word hope into it. It says that when Saul and his troops heard the Philistines' challenge, they were terrified and lost all hope. Lost all hope. Hope was lost. Their hearts were melted. They're shaking in their boots. Literally, it says there. And for 40 days more, both morning and evening, this challenge was issued forth from this behemoth. Okay? Then onto the scene comes our young hero, David. David was not yet old enough to join the army like his three older brothers. He had actually seven brothers, and three of them were old enough to actually be in the army, so that made David way down on the line there in age-wise. But he was the one actually to take care of his family's livestock. That was the job of the youngest child, is to take care of the sheep. But his father wanted to know how the battle was going, how his brothers that were in the army were going, and he wanted to kind of support them and get news of that at the same time. So he sent David, his youngest, and says, hey, get word, send these provisions to the troops and to the commanders. About 20 miles away the battle was from where David lived. And when he got there, it says he went out to the battle lines where his brothers were to see how they were. Let's continue the story here. It says in 1 Samuel 17:23, as he was talking to them, his brothers, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from the lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. But notice what it says the next line there. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. And again, it's very interesting. If you look at the actual word in Hebrew for great fear, it's actually the same one that was translated lost all hope in the last passage in verse 11. It's the same two words there, great fear. This terrifiedness, this one that just had them melting in their own armor. And like I said, Goliath had this armor on him, and in normal days, in those days, the Israelites didn't have any armor. They had just leather armor. They didn't have bronze. The Israelites knew how to work iron and bronze. They were that technically advanced. And so they gave this giant Goliath their best. Their best. Their champion was wearing their finest armor that they could ever make. And so here comes David. Sees this Goliath. Here's what he has to say. And the rest of the army hid in fear. But David still had hope. David had hope still. Why? Because it says that. So in the next verse, or next passage, he goes up to King Saul and says this in verse 32. Don't give up hope. I'm ready to fight this Philistine. You know, don't give up hope. Don't shake in your boots. Don't be terrified because of this giant. I have hope. Don't give up hope. I will go and fight this Goliath. This is the second time in this chapter that the word hope is used. The first was to describe the army, saying that they're hopeless. But now David comes along and says, hey, I have hope. Don't give up hope. I'm here. I'm going to fight this giant. And of course, you know the rest of the story. Saul offers David his armor to fight, but because it was made for Saul, and he was a huge man in himself, David can't use it. And so just armed with a sling and five stones, David comes to answer out Goliath's challenge. Now, I was going to say this in the children's corner, but I forgot to. So I'll just say it here. Just a little insight here. Anyone know why David chose five stones? Did he think he was going to miss? Actually, there's an answer in the Bible, not in this passage, but if you read 2 Samuel and 1 Corinthians, the reason why he chose five stones is because we're told Goliath had four brothers. There's four other giants living in the land of Philistines about that time, and all seem to be related to this Goliath, but so he chose five stones. So that's just a little side note there. But anyways, David chose these five stones. He comes out to the battle, and Goliath comes up to him and says this. I love this thing here. Goliath insults. He says, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? Come here, and I'll give you the flesh, or give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the fields. And he curses God and comes at him. Now we're told in this passage that David does bring his shepherd's staff with him, his stick. But that is a singular stick, and Goliath in the passage, if you look in the Hebrew, it's actually the plural, sticks. So I don't know if Goliath is making a further insult by saying, hey, I see two sticks there, one being held by another stick. I mean, you're so skinny, you seem like a stick. I don't know if that was the case or not, but it's in the plural there. I see sticks. Are you a dog coming at me with sticks? But he insults him and curses God. So I think Goliath was implying how small and skinny David was. He does call him a boy and realizes that he comes, but he has very little respect for this person in front of him. However, David, the man of hope, says this in response. He says, you come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come at you in the name of the Lord Almighty. Now, where have we seen the Lord Almighty? Remember last week? Yeah, that's the same word. The Lord of hosts. I come at you not only with sticks and with swords and shields. I come at you with all the hosts of God with me. Right? I come at you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of the heavenly armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. On this day, the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Continues. Today, I will give you the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the fields, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Now, that's a message of hope there. That's a message of hope. I mean, there's no word of hope in here, but I mean, that's the message he's saying. Hey, we're going to defeat you. You think you're going to defeat us, but we're going to defeat you. So, his hope did not disappoint. David comes out to Goliath, and with a single throw of his against the forehead of the giant, the rock comes in, and he falls dead. And hence we have this weakling defeating this giant. Now that we've learned this, or talked about this story, let's look at the lessons that can be learned. Again, the whole point of this story, and in fact, different stories in the Bible, is that you don't need to be the strongest or the most powerful to have hope. But the first lesson we can learn from this story is that hopeless leaders have hopeless followers. You see, when I read about this troop of Israel being terrified and losing all hope at the first mention of Goliath's challenge, I wondered why. Why did this challenge come at them at this point and make them so heartless? After all, they had a champion of their own. King Saul was one of the strongest men in their army. One of Saul's distinguishing features was that he was head and shoulders above everyone else. He was an awe-inspiring in and of himself. In fact, in chapter 9, when we're introduced to Saul, he's described this way: as an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites, a head and shoulders above any others. Now, this word without equal is actually kind of deceptive here in the NIV. There's actually the word, he's good. The word tov, it's good. It's the word that's used many times over in Genesis when God says, and God saw what he created and it was good. It was tov. That's the word there in Hebrew. And so the actual word tov is used twice in describing him in this word. So it's he's not, to use bad English, he's the goodest of the good. So I can't put that in the translation, but that's how the NIV translated. He's without equal. He's the goodest of the good. He's the tovest of the tov type of idea. In fact, one translation expresses it better when he says he was young and well-built. Well-built young man. Again, I kind of pictured those giants that we saw at the beginning. I thought Saul as kind of a skinny weakling as well. But no, he seems, from what the Word of God says, to be a well-built young man. And so our question is, why didn't Saul go out there and defeat Goliath? He had the armor that we're told that he wants to give to David. He had the training. Why didn't he go out? Because he was hopeless. Like I said before, he had lost all hope. He got depressed because God had rejected him and God's spirit was taken away from him. And that left him hopeless. And Saul's hopelessness is best seen in the story when he tells David this. He says, you are not able to go out fight this Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy. And he's been a fighting man from his youth. You know, this Goliath, yes, he's grown up a big man. But you're just a little boy. And so I think when Saul's hopelessness, it started trickling down to his troops. And so when they saw Goliath, they didn't think, oh, Saul's got this in the hand. Boom, there's our man. They said, wait a second. Saul's without hope, and so that means we're without hope. The leader, the idea of the leader being hopeless, and his followers getting that idea as well, sunk in. I think if Saul just had a little bit of hope, he would have been able to face down Goliath. But instead he allows this stick figure of a boy to go into battle for him. I mean, as you look at it, even Saul's hopelessness here, it goes even further from as David distinguishes himself from Goliath, because Saul is stating that Goliath is so much better than even I am. I wasn't trained from my youth, right? This Goliath has been young. I just came into my kingship here recently. So Saul's heart was so full of despair and fear that when David came, he didn't even recognize him at first, it seems like. I mean, David had been, we're told in chapters before that David had been ministering to him, playing music on his harp to soothe the savage beast. And yet at the end of the story, after he defeats Goliath, Saul says, well, who is this guy? Who's his father? That's what we see there in chapter 17, verse 55. Because Saul is so focused on the problem, so focused on his hopelessness that he doesn't have God with him anymore, that it spread to his troops as well. He failed to recognize who God was. And so that comes back to our idea that even though Saul was strong and powerful an individual himself, it didn't take that, he didn't need that strength to have hope. It didn't make him strong in hope. And on the contrast, it was David who was not considered strong who had the hope, right? He was not strong or powerful, but David had hope. And my prayer is that we will never have a leader that will be without hope. I hope that you never have a leader in the pulpit here or elsewhere in your work or whatnot that's hopeless, that sees no point in life or in doing work. Because that will cause you to lose hope. But you know what? When you have that hope, like David did, it brings hope to others. Because after the battle, what's their song that they sang? Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands, right? That brought the hopes of people back up, right? They started following a person who had hope instead of this hopeless king. And so our first idea First lesson we can learn is hopeless leaders have hopeless followers. But second of all, hope is based on experience. Now, I'm not going to spend much time on this point because this has kind of been one of my points throughout the sermon series. But God often uses times of experience that we've had that bring us hope. And that was true for David. In David's time as a shepherd, prepared him for this battle of Goliath. David might not have had the muscles Goliath had, but he practiced often with his sling. He had the tools that he had. Watching sheep was not an invigorating job. I mean, it wasn't too hard. So I'm sure David had a lot of time out there in the fields to practice with his sling, because it not only helped defend himself, as we'll see in a moment, but it also helped keep the sheep kind of together. I mean, he could throw a stone and scare a sheep to come back to the flock, or he might even be able to gently throw a stone and kind of warn the sheep, hey, you're in the wrong spot. Wake up, turn around, and pay attention. So he could have used a sling very often and was very accurate. But of course, it was also a weapon that could be used to defend against wild animals. In fact, he tells Saul in 1 Samuel 17:34, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it and struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck it and killed it. Your servant has also killed a lion and bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Again, David had hope because of he knew God, who God was, and by experience. He had killed other dangerous animals before, and this Philistine was nothing more than that in his eyes. I mean, he was looking past the problem and looking to who God was. I like what Russell Johnston said on this. Great quote. He says, get the right perspective. When Goliath came against the Israelites, the soldiers all thought, he's so big, we can never kill him. David looked at the same giant and thought, he's so big, I can't miss. You see, God's promises never failed David. And they don't fail us either. I mean, at times, we think many times we get to the point where we're not sure if God can help us through the certain situations or certain circumstances. The problem might be too big, that's too gigantic for us. And yet, if we look past that and onto God's faithfulness, we see that God will be faithful. His promises are always yes and amen, as we're told. They've never failed. And when we take our eyes off the current circumstances and reflect on who God is in our lives and who he has been in our experiences, then we have hope. Now, if we don't have hope because of our experiences, we can also have the experiences that were written down for us in the story of David. We might not have a personal experience to lean upon, but we can look at stories like this in the Bible, because these stories are not just written for kids in Sunday school lessons. I mean, we see them in Sunday school lessons, but this one, even though it seems unlikely and untrue, it's true. It happened. It's the Bible. It's not a fable or a myth or a legend that someone came up with, that this David defeated this giant. No, David was a real person. Goliath was a real person. And God came through for David. God is the Lord of hosts. God who defeats our enemies. God is strong and mighty and is on our side. So we need to look at the solution to the problems instead of the problems themselves. And when we do so, we can have hope. And many times he'll give us that hope because he's been proven many, many times in the past. So again, I'm going to touch on that, but I'm going to make that a small point there. Final point here, though, I haven't talked about before. Music brings hope. I think there's a direct link between music and hope. Music is something that can bring hope back into our lives. I mean, music is such a way of encouraging us many times. I mean, there are songs out there that are kind of depressing. I mean, there are songs out there that, you know, there are some country songs where, oh, yeah, my wife died or lost my truck. And, you know, and there are songs out there that, if you play them backwards, are kind of weird as well, and they have some secret messages supposedly in them. Kind of reminds me of a joke. What do you get when you play a country song backwards? You get your wife back, you get your house back, you get your truck back. Anyways, but music does have that idea that gives us hope, doesn't it? As I said earlier, music has a way of soothing our soul. It calms us down when we're feeling nervous or afraid. It gives us that kind of peace that flows through us and takes away the sting of our pains. Helps us focus our mind not on the things that we have, but the problems we have, but the way God works through these things. It transports us to places of contentment. I know personally, down through the ages, I've enjoyed being able to play the piano or singing when I'm troubled or have a conflict in my mind. I remember one time when I was younger, and my father gathered our family together and told us, "Hey, I feel God's called for us to move from our house and our home to another church." And I was stunned by this revelation and was still reeling from this news, and I found myself wandering to the piano. I've been practicing for a piano special in the coming weeks there, and the song I've been practicing for weeks before that had the line that goes, "When peace like a river attends my way, it is well with my soul. It is well as well with my soul." So that brought a peace about me at that time. It brought a time of for the whole family to kind of grieve and yet celebrate that God's still in control and that we can overcome our hopes, overcome our fears because of God's hope that he gives to us. So music does bring hope, and there's some kind of connection there. And David knew this. I mean, where did David get the hope to defeat Goliath from? I think it was for many of the times he was out in the field singing his praises to God. I mean, again, out in the field, no one can hear you. I'm not sure if David had a good voice, but he wrote many psalms. We read that in the Bible. I mean, so many of them are written down in the book of Psalms. That David enjoyed singing his praises to God, saying, "Hey, God, you are good. When I look at the stars, when I look at the land around me, when I see these things, I can trust in you. I know I have hope in you. I know you're going to help me and bless me." I mean, throughout his music in the Bible, we're told this. There are some laments and say, "God, you know, sometimes I feel estranged from you. I feel far from you, and yet I know you're there. I'm going to praise you anyways." That's what these psalms are all about. That's who David was all about. This music, whether in his mind, in his heart, or I mean, it soothes Saul. When Saul had this evil spirit, David came and played his music, and it calmed him down. That evil spirit left Saul. I mean, it brought hope to Saul. It brought hope. So it should bring even more hope to David, who actually knew God in a personal way, who was not rejected by God and felt that rejection of him. But for all of us, we need to have that kind of a leader that has hope and is based on experience, and also that has this music that can bring hope to us. And so I know that if you're starting to lose hope, turn on some music maybe. Turn on the radio station. I know WBIC? The radio station, the Christian radio station around here. Link to our website, by the way, if I messed it up there. There's a couple of Christian websites around, websites and radio stations around here. Turn on some music. It just changes the way you think. And if you're driving and feel upset at someone driving, cutting you off, turn on that radio and you might hear a testimony. You might hear a word of encouragement. You might hear a song. I mean, there were some songs this last week. I thought, "Oh, I need to play that for the service," but I knew that my sermon was going to be running long. So I said, "Oh, I can't play it this week," but there are good songs on the radio. In fact, the theme or purpose statement of the radio station is faith, family, hope. Faith, hope, family. Faith, hope, family. I'm messing this up this morning. I didn't write it down very well. Anyways, that's what they do. They bring hope. Anyways, I thought of something else, but I'm going to just leave that for next week there. But listen to the radio stations if you're discouraged or losing hope, and that will bring music into your life. And so I think all three of these lessons can be learned from our passage this morning. How to have that kind of hope that David had. He didn't trust in himself. He trusted in God. He followed a God who could lead him with hope. He had hope based on his experience and knowing God worked in his life before, and he can work again. He can help him defeat the giants in his life. And that internal music that he had, that praise to God what he said. In fact, some of the things he said to Goliath was kind of a praise, you know, type of thing. I'm going to defeat you, and the Lord's army is going to come in. It just was a wonderful hymn of praise there. And God came through for David. He gave him this hope. So I hope this morning, as we live this morning, that you will feel God working in our lives as we look upon him as our hope and our rock that we sing about this morning.